everyone, and thanks for listening to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Teja. Today we're joined by Jim Funk and Lawrence Chong to talk about their book, Creative Change Leadership, about mastering holistic leadership in a time of disruption. Lawrence is a group CEO of Consulus from Singapore, and Jim is Global Leadership Fellow of Consulus from the USA. They bring their combined 70 plus years of applied experience that has helped global leaders of listed entities, large nonprofits, family conglomerates, and social enterprises to navigate complex situations. Creative Change Leadership outlines the characteristics and new competencies for leaders to be able to navigate in today's world and lead creative and lasting change. Hi, Jim and Lawrence. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast. How are you today?
Fine. Yes. Thank you for having us. It's really a pleasure to be here and get to speak with you today.
Great. And it's absolutely a pleasure to have you. So today we're here to talk about your new book, Creative Change Leadership. So Jim, let me start with you on this one. Could you share with us why you decided to write the book?
Well, sure. You know, over the years of working with leaders, decades really between the two of us, we learned a lot about leadership, leadership that works, leadership that doesn't work. And we've seen things change over time about what leaders need to be able to do and the issues and problems that they face. And so we thought, well, we really need to provide some tools and some new approaches to leadership. And so we learned a lot in doing that. We did some research as well, but we mostly drew on our experiences because we learned so much that way. And so we have a lot to share, and we thought, well, the best way to share that is to first teach a course, which we did. And initially, we really got some good feedback from that and decided, well, let's write a book about it so we can, we can get the word out there and provide tools, across industries and in many areas where there won't be a chance to take a course necessarily, but to learn the model, but to also have the tools to work with, because it's great to have theory, but we also wanted to provide practice and provide methodologies, for leaders to be able to navigate the, as we call it, complex world in which we live and work now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lawrence, have you got anything to add to that?
Well, I think there are many books on leadership. I think what we were conscious about was not to add another book to leadership, but to really recognize the moment where the whole world order is going through a reset. I think Mark Carney at the World Economic Forum said it very well. The old order is gone, it's a new order, it's complex. At the same time, we are at the edge of a very massive technological shifts. This, within just the next 20 years, space exploration is very real. A moon base is literally going to happen. We are at breakneck speed on artificial intelligence. We are facing major shifts in energy. So even in our interaction with leaders, many of them have shared that this idea of having to deal with their digital self, physical self, spiritual self, they have to go through massive reset. So the book is for them. It's not a book to add to the shelf, because there are many books on leadership. But I think this is an existential moment, even on the notion of leadership. I don't think leaders can be taught. They need to be formed. And what we tried to do was not to teach, but to really journey with them respectfully. Because we found that many leaders are competent, but they may not be formed to discover themselves to deal with this complexity between the digital, the physical, and the spiritual, right? And this book addresses that head on in a massive shift for humanity.
I think another driver for us too, Teja, was that, 3 or 4 years ago, we were having lunch, Lawrence and I together, here in Indiana, actually at that time, with an associate dean of an undergraduate program at a university. And remember, Lawrence, she said after we showed her the model and the ideas and the tools, she said, "This is exactly what we need to be teaching, our undergraduates as well as leaders who are out in the field currently." So I think that really encouraged us when we heard her say that we really need to do this and not just have it be in the background, but put it out front.
Yeah, that's some great feedback you received for your work. And again, yeah, it's a very important book. But this is actually the second title in a book series, with the first book being Creative Change, which Hugh Lawrence wrote a couple of years ago. So could you share with us how creative change leadership falls up from creative change?
It flows because, as Jim mentioned, we are practitioners. We walk, we coach, we mentor leaders in their transformation, whether it's multinationals, whether it's nonprofit, and whether it's in government. And you can see from the advanced praise from all the leaders who read the book, and they give us that feedback, right? So we found that many leaders are inherently seeking to be a change maker, whether it's in a hospital, or whether they are dealing with a nonprofit in Africa, or whether they are dealing with very big, massive decisions in Europe or in Asia. Not a problem. But I think the issue is, how do you provide a very set of rules when it comes to leadership and decision making? And that's when you cannot just say that you would like to bring about change for good. I think the first book was really setting the foundation to help people clarify personally, are you serious enough to be a change maker? Okay, that's done. We have some tools there. But we are hoping that when people come to the second book, we are dead serious about leading for change. And leadership is tough because you're expected to perform almost 24/7. You're never let off because of digital. I was just with the principal just now because I'm now the chairman of a school. Someone posted something negative about the school. He himself has to investigate, and it's on the dot. So I think people are being forced to make decisions in seconds. I think the earlier age where we had manufacturing, people had more time to discern. But I think Jim would agree with me that it is very intense decision making, and therefore you need to have high intensity on your being. And that's why this second book is really to deal with the heart and complexity of being a leader. It's not as simple as, pressing a few buttons, making the calls. It's really a whole thoughtful journey. So from a change maker to a change making leader, that's quite a jump. And you need something very dedicated to do this well.
I think I would say it's also it's the how and the why of creative change. It's one thing to talk about creative change and leading it, but the question becomes, how do you do that? And what are the tools that you need, and what are the abilities and capabilities that you need to be able to do that? So that was really why we needed to put that out there as well. Then here is, why it's important to be able to lead in these times. And as Lawrence mentioned earlier, it's a more formative approach to becoming a leader than just taking courses or learning, but becoming. It's really about becoming that leader who can lead change, particularly, transformative change, because it needs to be pervasive change and very intensive and very impactful change in today's world.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we talk more about that, and because this is a book podcast, could you share with us what was the writing process? What was it like to write this book? Jim, let's start with you.
Well, sure, and it was interesting because I've written articles, and so forth in the past, but have never co-authored a book, with someone. And so becomes a question of, well, how do you co-author something, and how do you work together to integrate it and have it flow and not be, well, here's Lawrence over here, and then here's Jim over here. So we took the approach that, well, let's write from our own experiences, but show it as and say it as we did this, or we had this, or we learned that, as opposed to I, Jim, or I, Lawrence. There are a few places where we had to actually show that it was one of us that had a certain experience, but mostly we took an approach of doing this together. And it's interesting too, because here we are on opposite sides of the world. I am more in the Western Hemisphere and Lawrence is in the Eastern. And so the cultures are not identical, of course, and experiences aren't going to be identical. The way businesses work, organizations work, is not going to be identical. But we really found many commonalities, though. And it's true, we've learned that many of the problems leaders face, whether you're in the East or the West, are the same. People are the same. There are certain practices, of course, that are different, but so really, once we started writing and seeing what each other wrote, once we could follow the table of contents that we put out there, it just seemed to flow. And I have to say that, Lawrence's team did a lot of the design type work, and I'm not so much of a design guy. I'm more of a word guy, but he and the designers at Consulus really put the design on the book, and that makes it more interesting than just words on a page. But stories and parables and ways of expressing the concepts were fun to work together on.
Yeah, and Lawrence, have you got anything to add to that? Especially that this is not your first book.
Well, I would say that compared to the first book, which was really painful for me personally, it was a cathartic experience. I think I shared that a few times, with others. The second book was a breeze, and I have to give everyone a context. I've known Jim for 9 years, and during the 9 years, I think we really built a very strong relationship, because we had to build the holistic leadership model. We had to integrate, we had to learn from each other. And as what Jim said, we are from both very different cultures, but I think that was the advantage, because we have a bookend view of the world from the West to the East, and both facing very complex situations, right? You talk about the United States, obviously the world's largest economy, many of the advances. And then you look at the East, where we are seeing the rise of China. We are seeing all these technological advances and things like that. So we have quite a balanced view. And Jim is a very kind person to me. And I really love working with Jim, because he's very patient. And so, because I'm a very fast thinker, so I express my thoughts and I like to throw everything at him. And he just take it in. I don't know what kind of superpower he has, but he takes it all in. And then he unpacks it back to me, and he go like, okay, now it sounds so much better. So I think we both practiced the heart and spirit, the four elements, right? First, we had to build that relationship with each other. We had to embrace each other, because some situations that, for example, there was something that we talked about, conflict resolution, right? I mean, in the West, there's a certain way. In the East, there's a certain way. For example, in the East, we are non-confrontational, right? Whereas in the West, it's best to call. It's best to engage, right? So we have to really learn, and how to say, unlearn and learn. And I think that was so. By the time we came to writing the book, it was very much a breeze. Jim did the lion's share of it. I built together, we integrated with the team, and I think I really enjoyed the experience. I hope it is for Jim, but for me, I loved it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a synergy that was created that we experienced even the first time that we did a workshop for some leaders together. The synergy and the ability to flow from one to the other in seamless ways was obvious. So I think that then overflowed into how we were able to write the book together.
Fascinating. Yeah, it seems like you created a great team together. And now I'll move on to the book and the book content. And in the book, you say that today, what we need in this complex world we live in is holistic leadership. So, Lawrence, could you define what that holistic leadership is, and why is it so critical in today's world?
Well, let's look at even the the basis for a lot of leadership models, right? They emerged from the time of the Second World War, the end of the Second World War, and when the world was going to be focused on globalization, maximization. So you had leaders who evolved from the idea of managers, right? So we were trying to meet the supply chain, the whole history of how it evolved. But now you have a very different situation. You cannot just be efficient because efficiency is expected, right? It's a norm. You cannot also just be someone who need to have a good grasp of what you do because information easily available, artificial intelligence, right? So what do you do when you have maximization of efficiency and maximization of information? What is the role of a leader when the leader no longer needs to be competent, but more be able to get a sense of himself or herself to deal with these situations, which are very massive systems? So we if and you can trace this by looking at computing power. I mean, when I started studying, I didn't have a computer. It came in the 90s for me, and I had still remember the VGA monitors at that time that was color, and so everyone came to my house to play computer games because they went from one color to many colors, and 286 and all this. So processing power was very slow, and that was the advent of the internet. But compared to now, computing power has jumped by a million times, literally, right? So we have supercomputers in our pockets. So what you need are no longer leaders who are efficient, who are able. That's expected of you. But you need discerning leaders. So the very premise of the book is to ask a very important question. How do you center yourself, which is your heart and spirit? Who you are, where you come from, your identity and values. Because that we found was the number one issue. A lot of things are manifestation when people are not clear about their value system and their identity, and they're not comfortable with it, right? Then you go to the second one, which is embrace it. Why? Because you have to deal with massive systems, information systems, identity systems. If you are not able to be embrace it enough, so computing always talks about processing power. But we expect leaders now to be immediately embrace it because you are thrown. Like just among the three of us, we are from very different cultures, from where you come from, Taya, when you're in Europe, you're in the UK, and Jim is an American, I'm a Singaporean, right? So this happens naturally for us, but a generation ago may not be so, right? So I think then the next thing that is to be very frank, we are the most connected in all of human history, but we still struggle with relationships. What kind of relationships? It's not just friendship. How do you negotiate trade-offs, understanding? How do you give space for a completely divergent idea from yours and take it forward? Then finally, we are only finally talking about if you have understood your heart, if you have realized how you can reach out to others and you know how to build a bridge across, then we talk about your competency. Now, it's a complete turnaround because traditionally, leaders are thought to be effective managers. That's really the bulk of the school of thought. How are you competent? How do you drive? How do you manage? But that kind of leadership is not holistic in a very complex and a very maximization of information, a maximization of kind of a situation which is really the norm, right? So I think we had to, many a times when we started, I think COVID helped us where we had to journey with this 60, 70 over leaders over a few cohort. We have to situate them. And they appreciated it that they were situated. Oh my, now you're helping me to see who I am to the others and who I am to myself. That is why we call it holistic leadership.
Yeah, and Jim,
Yeah, I
and
think
you.
to focus on that term holistic, why did we come up with that, and what does it mean? And the term holistic can mean a lot of different things to different people in different settings, but from our perspective, it was to be able to say that leadership is about leading people, whole people, and it's not just leading skill sets or getting tasks done or getting the work out, but it's leading people. It's to be able to engage people, to inspire people, And it's the whole person. It's not just that skill set, but it's the body, mind, and spirit of the whole person who is the leader and who is the person or the follower being led. So it's being able to treat people as people. And again, not just a person who, helps meet goals and objectives and get the work done. But when you do that, when you treat people as people and understand that they are a human person, then they're more likely to buy in and to be supportive of the leader's vision and way to get to that vision, that place that they want to get to as an organization. And I think it's especially needed today because there are many threats and forces to humanity in many ways. And while appreciative or artificial intelligence is obviously very new and it's exciting and it has a lot to offer, in a sense, it can threaten the humanness of people and dealing with people, because now all of a sudden we're dealing with something artificial. So we somehow have to be able to keep the humanity in work and keep the humanness in organizations, and not just ways to get work done, but to get it done with people and with teams. So that's one of the main reasons why we call it holistic leadership, and why that's what we think is needed to be able to lead change, to be a change leader.
Yeah, absolutely. And to take this further, Jim, let me ask you, what are the character traits of a holistic leader?
Well, I think first I need to explain that character traits are basically the characteristics, the character, the way the person is, and we distinguish that from competencies. We have leadership competencies, holistic leadership competencies that we describe about what the leader needs to be able to do and how they need to be able to be as a leader. But before that, you've got to have certain traits and characteristics that enable you to become that holistic leader. So over the years of working with and observing leaders who we found to be very holistic leaders, creative change leaders, we've identified and seen these, I would say, eight characteristics, and I'll just list them so that we know what they are, put them out there. But and you can see how they undergird the competencies that the holistic leader needs to have. So the first is virtuous, and Lawrence mentioned, the person's virtues and values are critical. So they've got to be a virtuous person, ethical, and just be able to make ethical decisions and to behave in ethical ways. Trusted, so a leader who is not trusted is not going to be able to lead successfully. So that's important. Transparency is so important, and that's one of the things that leads to trust or to distrust. When the leader is not transparent or not able to be transparent, then that's hard to trust them and to know that the information you're getting is accurate. Balanced, we use that term because, for example, a leader who is all work and doesn't have a life, a work-life balance, is not going to be successful, because they're going to burn out, for one thing, and they're going to burn other people out. So balanced has many meanings, but that's one of the important meanings of that characteristics. Aware is about self-awareness, and other awareness is as well. It's really a part of what we refer to as emotional intelligence. To be able to be aware of self, aware of others, aware of how we manage ourselves and how we manage our relationships with others. So that self-awareness is so critical, and many leaders don't have that. It's interesting because they think they know, how they're perceived by other people. But unless you ask, or unless you're open enough to be able to hear input and feedback, then you may not be aware of how you're coming across to other people. And so that awareness is a critical characteristic. The servant leader is another important characteristic, to understand that you're serving others, not directing, or just not just leading, but that you're leading as a servant. And then finally, we use the characteristic inspired. And inspired means both the leader is inspired to lead, but also is inspiring to others. So a leader who is not inspiring, who is not inspired, is going to be a very boring leader, and they're probably not going to be able to inspire others to reach the goals of the organization. So those are the eight characteristics, and as I said, they undergird and we build upon those to create then the holistic leadership competency model, which is the HERO model, and we'll talk about that here next.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we do that, is there anything else you wish to add to that, Lawrence?
Well, I think when we went through these with the, again, great thanks to the 60 to 70 participants, I mean the leaders who went through this whole learning series with us, the holistic leadership, we realized that a lot of them did not have an opportunity to unpack. They have heard of these terms before, I mean traits, servant leadership, I mean, but they are all conceptual, right? But when they had to internalize it, when they had to confront situations, when they heard their peers share about it, and they listened to case studies, it helped them to uncover, discover a side of themselves. And I think everyone is almost like, I would say, a leader is a treasure yet to be found. I think if you don't know how to do it yourself and you don't have other people helping you, you're always a hidden treasure. And I like to think that our book helps the hidden treasures to be uncover and unpacked, right? And I think this is really important to understand that every leader is called to be at the center to serve. And if you don't really understand yourself very well, and you're trying to navigate the situations in your head, and we all have our wounded selves and the issues that we deal with, it really gets very foggy when you do take things personally, when you're under a lot of stress, it's easy to be misunderstood. And I think when we went through, in fact, one leader said that this is a safe space for me to, unwind and redefine myself. And I thank you for it. And I think that was the best compliment we've got, because it's not about being a, powerful leader or even a great leader. I think the best kind of leaders understand their weak spots, their vulnerabilities, but it's not to be beaten, but to able to reconcile and to recover. And I think so. We see ourselves as a little bit like a leadership hospital, where people come and heal and move forward, right? So I think that was a great feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I'll go back to what Jim said about the HERO framework that you cover in the book, because I think it would be very interesting to discuss the different components of that model with you. So the first element is heart and spirit. So Lawrence, could you tell us what that is about?
It's interesting, when we went to study also in preparation of the book, between the West and the East, Socrates had very strong views on leadership. I mean, Plato, and even if you look at Chinese masters who came up with this whole system, civilizational thought on what a leader should be. For example, in China, when you talk about the mandate of heaven, the first thing is values. What grounds you? What drives you? So heart and spirit is at the core of it, right? So if you before you do anything, you first need to identify where do your values, where are the roots of your values. And I don't think a lot of people have a that privilege to unpack, because we just take for granted that we come from a certain place. But actually, if you go in depth, and that's what we try to do a lot of times, the heart and spirit. Who are you? Where do you come from? You know, so that as to help you to understand, right? So then when you understand that, then you are in a better position to be embracive. Because like a tree, right? Unless you are rooted, you can't reach out, you can't embrace, you can't hold, right, others, you can't hold biodiversity. I mean, just looking at the order of things in nature. And interestingly, this is also very much ancient wisdom, not something that Jim and I invent, but we managed to put it together to acknowledge. Because like I said, right, a lot of leadership models was for the post-war, meeting growth, achieving targets. I mean, it worked, it served its purpose. But what we wanted to do was a more lasting journey for leaders to meet you know, the challenges. So this idea of embracive, as I mentioned just now, once you understand your heart and spirit, and then the proof of your heart and spirit is how embracive are you? And this is very important, because if you are not, and you are dealing with very complex, I said earlier, the maximization situation now, maximization of knowledge, maximization of tools, you are not in a better position to see more completely, more holistically. And that's why it affects the way you relate to people. We spent quite a bit of time to go through the different dynamics of relationship, power, balance, conflict resolution, communication. But we try to look at it again from the rootedness of where's your heart and spirit, and how do you embrace, and therefore you can understand the situation really. I think sometimes when people deal with relationship, there is this what we call implied understanding that people come from the same base. They don't. When people fail in relationship, they are not necessarily in the same understanding as you when it comes to relationship. Just like me and Jim, he came from another culture. I come from another culture. We first had to, because we made an effort to understand each other's heart and spirit. So by the time we came to relational, it was easier, right? So I think if you looked at the whole model that ends in the end operational, and I would say that operational is consequential of heart and spirit, embracive, relational, and then it will just work itself. It will really solve itself. Now, people have asked us, are you asking leaders to be heroes? Now, the reason why it came up to hero, simply put, is this. If you look at all the heroes of both cultures, East and West, it is due to values that heroes, you know, do it for the greater good. A real hero, not a comic superhero, but a real hero that really, you know, in service of the other. And then at the end of the day, every hero have to come to terms with themselves, with their vulnerability, and what they need to do for the others, right? So we are not asking for heroes to be put on a pedestal, but we are asking very fundamental questions of why do you even serve in the first place? And if you do choose to serve, then you should do it holistically by understanding HERO, right? So it is both. That's why we keep using the word formation. We are not doing a lesson. We are not trying to teach you, because a lot of leaders are competent, as I said. I think it's an insult to go to any leader and say, do you know how to do your job? They do, but they may not have the wisdom to lead. Doing and leading is two different things, because leading requires being, right? I mean, it sounds a bit philosophical, but turns out that all ancient schools on leadership talked a lot about this being that affects your doing, right? So again, this is not a monopoly of Jim and I, but I think we are bringing it back to almost questioning what is the school of philosophy in the whole wisdom of leadership today, when you have fullness of information and power at your fingertips. So again, you may be good at doing, but you're not leading. You may be great at doing your job, but it doesn't make you a wiser leader. So that is what the HERO model is meant to do. It is a journey of yourself towards others so that you can lead holistically with others, not just for yourself, but together.
Yeah, Absolutely. And Jim, is there anything you wish to add to that?
I think Lawrence, you covered it perfectly, so I don't think I have anything to add.
Yeah, no, it's all right. And obviously, we still got three more components to go over, the second one being embracive thinking. So, Jim, could you tell us what that is and why is it so important?
Yeah, sure. Well, the term embracive thinking was something we had to come up with to describe what we were talking about conceptually. But really, what it was is the idea of an openness and a willingness to consider other points of view, to look at things with an open mind, and not to come with solutions, but come with questions. And so we came across the word embracive to describe that, meaning that you want more information. You want to be able to have everything that you can have, at least to make solid decisions. So it's really critical for decision making that the leader is able to both gather and to assimilate and to interpret the data that they have in order to be able to make solid decisions. And it doesn't mean just tolerating different points of view, but actually seeking different points of view. And that's another level of being open-minded. We also use a methodology that falls kind of under this category of embracive thinking called See, Judge, Act. Okay, so it's a sort of a three-part methodology of decision making and assessment, beginning with seeing and looking at what is it? What am I what am I seeing? What is this? Understanding it, and then judging is so what do I make of this that I see? And so this data or this information that I'm going to be using to make a decision. How do I interpret it? How do I understand it? And then the act is finally, what am I going to do about it? Now that I've seen this, judged or assessed this, now what am I going to do? And so that's kind of a methodology that we use for embracive thinking. And really it goes through all of the competency categories, but it's been a very practical way of being able to make sense out of everything that the leader is facing to be able to make solid decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And then let me move on to the third component, which is relational dynamics. So, Lawrence, earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that we've never been so connected in the world, and yet we've never struggled so much with relationships. So, could you talk to us a little bit more about that and why those relational dynamics are so important?
Well, I would point it to the fact that because computing power has become so massive, we now have compressed a lot of things. So even our communication, unlike in the past, is compressed. So you send a text message or you're communicating with the world at any one time. So you're not as intentional. So when you are building relationship, not just in the physical sense, but on the digital sense. That's why I often said you have a digital self, you have a physical self, and your spiritual self, right? And I think we addressed that very well in our book because that was the same challenge our cohort had, and we had to deal with it in a very real way. How do you deal with communication, building relationship in compressed time? Quite a number of leaders, they don't meet their teams because it's across the world. Right, and they have to build trust and be able to resolve very, very complex business challenges. I mean, if you run a what do you call a technology firm, and you are constantly hyperdrive competing, and there's no seem to be any time to have a break, then you have to be really intentional in building relationship. So, what we tried to do in this, understanding relational dynamic was also to address the changing forms of dynamic that is really happening today. And I think we definitely will want to follow up In fact, as part of this whole series, you know, we'll be again running the leadership experiences. We like to call them experiences because we are not there to teach anyone anything, but really to help them to journey. And part of this realization is that when people learn in a peer group and they're able to hear each other out in terms of their crisis situations, it really helps to provide a multi-lens view on how you have dealt with the relationship. So we had situations in our, you know, when we were journeying with these leaders, some have to manage upwards, some have to manage downwards, some have to manage their peers, right? So that complexity is what we have worked very hard to pay attention to and to do service, to do justice to all the people who shared with us the challenges they face in building a relationship across the world, and they are expected to do to get something done in a much shorter time. Right. In the past, it may take years, but now it takes months. Yeah.
You know, and another really important aspect and outcome of relationships and relational dynamics is being able to manage conflicts and to resolve conflicts. So, you know, a lot's been written and taught about conflict resolution and so forth. But, you know, conflict is a real part of human life, as we know. But the ability to resolve it effectively really does come down to the relationships. And so that's one of the other reasons why we talk about how important relational dynamics is to be able to do things like resolve conflicts in workplaces and between people and among people. People aren't the same; they're always going to disagree, and that's a healthy thing. But whether you can get past that or not and resolve it does depend on those relational dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really fascinating. And then the final part of the model is operational leadership. So, Jim, what's that about?
Well, it really comes down to the ability to lead the organization and the people that you're leading to work as teams effectively. It really comes down to teamwork, and without teamwork, without people who are motivated and inspired to get work done and who work together well as a team, the work isn't going to get done. And in the end, it does have to get done. Organizations do have to meet goals and objectives and so forth. But it's a question of how do you meet them? And holistic leadership is the way that they can be met in a way that's more human, that's more person-centered, and that considers the again the whole person, as we talked about. And so when it comes to being able to lead change, for example, that's one of the most difficult tasks a leader has, and one of the biggest challenges, because change is difficult for people. It's first of all difficult to even know what should the change be and why should we make this change, but then how are we going to make this change? And so we have different levels of change that we describe in the book. Some is just touch-up change, where you know there's just barely a few things that a few things that need to be adjusted, and that's what we call touch-up change. Then we have transformational change, which is really where there's going to be something very different that is created with this change, or that we move from and to. And so it's a critical aspect or capability of the change leader, the holistic leader, who can lead transformational change. And we even take it to the next level of what we call transfigurative change, which is a very pervasive, deep, impactful change that many organizations need to be able to do today in order to not just survive, but to be able to contribute what they believe that they're, you know, in the world to do, and to do it successfully. So I think those are some of the key aspects of operational leadership that we write about in the book, and that we hope leaders will take seriously.
Yeah. And Lawrence, what's your take on that?
Well, I think you know, some leaders, they go to B schools, Some have done MBAs, and when they came for this executive program that we served, they realized something that while you learn the concepts of strategy, thinking, they didn't really have a lot of time to deal with how they see themselves and how their value system impact their leadership models and how they realize it right at work. I think that's the contribution we hope to make. And we are not here to tell them step one, do this, step two, do this, but really to have a tool to see themselves and to understand why certain things happen. That's why I keep saying we focused a lot on the being that impacted the doing rather than now do this. It's, leadership is not a checklist. It's really about how aware you are in what you do and how aware you are that why are you doing this? Because you are actually kind of affected in the root causes of it for the from the being part, right? So I think that's our take of it and our contribution to, the whole school of philosophy on leadership today.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, you finish the book with a part that focuses on how to become a creative leader. And considering the book series is also looking at creative leadership as a whole and creative change, could you tell us why it's so essential for leaders to be creative? And also, how can they do this? Lawrence, let's start with you.
Well, it's important because this is a different age. I think many experts, whether you talk about economics, politics, so on and so forth, they all agree this is a very different age and a different age calls for creativity. The old norms have collapsed. New rules are being written. I mean, a very simple thing, right? That if you look at how the AI models are being built. China has its own model. The US has its own model. And they do intersect. That's very interesting. And they are both parallel and divergent at the same time. How this will pan out, no one knows. At the same time, you have three regions competing. Who is going to be the first one to, set up the moon base again, right? In the US, Elon Musk is about to be, SpaceX is about to be listed IPO. It's going to be one of the largest IPO in the world. China is doing the same because China is really halfway there as well, right? With its own international space station. So it's massive implications. So I think you cannot have leaders who expect that the whole context in which the School of Leadership was created was for a much more, I would argue, a predictable and maximization stage. Like I said just now, maximization is done. You are dealing with a very complex age, which is why you need creativity. But how can you get creative? I mean, as a trained designer myself, the funny thing is, my lecturer once told me, when you want to get creative, don't start thinking about it. The first thing you need to do is to open your eyes and see. I mean, exactly as what Jim said, see, judge, act. And I thought that was very interesting because he said, unless you know what you are seeing and how to see, you will never get creative. And creativity is not a goal. That's very interesting what he said. Creativity is a passage, it's a journey. So what we tried to do was not to give answers. What we tried to do was to respect that every change maker, every leader have their own pathway. We are not here to say whether it's good or no good, but we hope that our multiplicity of tools and aids are useful to them in some parts of their journey. And, we like to say that leadership is almost like a curve, right? Some people are on the ascendant, some people are at their peak, some people are also preparing for succession. And it's really important to let go because when you let go for the next generation to rise and take your place. That is true leadership because you're enabling the future by building it on the back of your success, right? So, it's a curve. So I think what we also were mindful of is as we journey with all the different leaders, they're all at different ages, stages of their leadership journey. Some starting, some at the peak of their power. Some are really preparing to hand over, right? And these leadership stages matter. But in each one of them, I would argue that the old rules don't apply anymore. And there are also you also cannot say this is the rule. You have to give. So what we hope we have done for creative change leadership, just to put it on the record, is where we have provided a new set of a palette and paint brushes, but we are hoping that using the colors and the new palettes that we have presented and paint brushes, they will paint masterpieces of themselves in service of the common good. That's all. We are not here to tell you, please paint in this way. Right. So I think the beauty of it with Jim is I'm from the East, he's from the West. We brought the best of both worlds, hopefully, in service of everyone.
And I think it goes back to, the word that we've used, formation, in becoming this change leader, this holistic leader, which requires the ability to become more self-aware, to reflect on one's experiences, to explore your values and your vocation as a leader. To become aware of your own gifts and talents and those of others. So it's really an inside out, kind of thing, as opposed to going to class and being taught and then applying what you've learned. No, this is again about the formation of becoming an integrated person and leader. So how do you do that? Well, you have to be open to it for one thing. And then secondly, you've got to have a way of putting together a plan for your own formation and then doing it and then having some accountability for it. So one of the things we finish up with in the book is sort of a how to create your own personal ongoing formation plan, which begins, like most plans should begin, with an assessment of, where am I today as a leader against the model, or in comparison with the characteristics and the competencies of the holistic leader. And then what are my areas of opportunity? Where am I at least at this point, falling short, or I'm not as fully competent or able to lead holistically as I would like to. And then what am I going to do? So how am I going to change or to accomplish the things that I need to improve to become this creative change leader, this holistic leader? And so finally, then we really recommend some kind of an accountability partner to work with you as a leader, because it's difficult to do any of these things, especially formation, completely by yourself. And so an accountability leader or person might be a coach, an executive coach. It might be a colleague. It might be a boss even. But to work with somebody, because it's again hard to do by yourself. So to be able to be held accountable and to be able to track your progress and get feedback on your progress is critical. So that's why we really put those tools at the end of the book. So you can take the ideas and then put them into practice, and not just, okay, well, that was a nice read. I enjoyed reading that book, but how can I now become this kind of leader that we need in the future?
Yeah, definitely. And thank you very much, Jim and Lawrence, for your time today. It was great to discuss your book, Creative Change Leadership. And of course, I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of the book and read more about your insights, your hero framework, and everything else that you cover in it. But thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.